Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The second round is in full swing and the action increases from game to game. This is where the contenders are separated from the pretenders. To give you some skin in the game, DraftKings will be offering free-to-play pools every day of the basketball playoffs, offering players a free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes. That's up to $10,000 in total prizes up for grabs each day. The best part is that it's free to play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. Just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings Pools page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you, as always, by the Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Nick Berlansky, and I'm joined, as always, by Nick Horwat. Buddy, we're halfway through right now, our roster interview, and we talked about a lot of the forwards, and it just reminds me of how frustrating it was that this team wasn't able to have more success, because we have a lot of positive things to say about the Pittsburgh Penguins roster, because it was a pretty positive season up until the postseason. I mean, they still played extremely well in the postseason, but the more I look at this past season, the more frustrating it gets that there were no great results in the postseason.
And you can't even put the blame on the people we've been talking about in the postseason. Sure, the first line could have scored more. Sure. That's it. That's it.
Basically.
That was the only other downside aside from goaltending. I mean, yeah, it was a great postseason all in all, and it was a great regular season all in all. In fact, I was just looking at the standings of, the NHL. Let's think about it. I mean, we're going into the top four, final four, with a 2-4 seeds, a 3, who really shouldn't be a 3, but it's the way the cookie crumbles, and a 1 or a 2. Like, what happened this season exactly?
I mean, it shows that the NHL is very balanced, and it also shows that the NHL has the best playoff system in all of professional sports, but
this isn't even the regular system, though.
Exactly. I mean,
I think that's the better part, because there were two teams that, weren't they outright better than the Canadiens this year? Weren't the Flyers and Rangers?
The Rangers.
Well, they both came from the East, too. If there's one prediction anyone got right this year, is that the East was going to be the best division. But, yeah, this has been a wild, wild situation. Let's everyone just enjoy the playoffs, right?
We only have a couple weeks left of it.
Even though all the good teams are out.
I wouldn't say all the good teams. I still believe...
Oh, Tampa.
That Tampa and then the Western Conference, or not the Western Conference, the Western Division champion is still a very good team. But what we're going to do during today's episode is we're going to continue with our roster in review, and we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins defense and the top six that was for the Penguins once they finally got them all healthy after about a month and a half into the season. So we'll talk about the Pens defense, and we'll close out the show as we do every Monday episode with our weekly Pens poll. But let's start on the backside with the bottom pairing and Marcus Pettersson. He has 4 years remaining on that massive deal that he signed, still at $4 million per season for him. I would imagine that he's still, to you, as he is to me, not lived up to his first full season as a Pittsburgh Penguin. When he came over from Anaheim, he played extremely well in that first season. We looked at him as the next Brian Dumoulin. I think a lot of people had that inclination, but since then, he's kind of fallen off a cliff. Of course, finding time on the third pairing and being deployed as a third pairing defenseman, and even then, still struggling a little bit this year, but towards the end of the season, he was able to pick it back up, start to trend much into a better direction, but there's still a lot of holes in his game. Hora, what did you think about the Dragon this season?
Thought he played okay. Once the wheels kind of started getting turning, I guess you could put it, once everyone got healthy, once everyone caught their groove, thought he did fine because it's not easy being the third line guy when you're getting paid like the way he is. I mean, for being the fourth highest paid defenseman on the team, soon to be the fifth at least, next season, that'd be a lot of money to be putting down in your third pairing. It's not ideal, honestly, because that is a lot of money. That is a lot of tenure between those two guys for not your worst pairing. They're not technically your worst. They're more of a, especially these two, they did play well together. I'm not in any way shaming any of this. Marcus Pettersson is damn worth his $4 million. John Marino will be worth his 4-4. I'm just saying, for a third pairing, it's a lot, but so be it. They both played well. Pettersson's who we're focusing on, and, you know, I get he was the butt of trade talks all year, but someone has to be, and he is the most likely option, even still now, I think, so who knows what exactly happens with him. Yeah, he played well. I mean, we've realized he's not going to be an offensive threat. I think we've all put this... No. We've all realized this. I mean, 20 assists last season is very good, and 17 in the 57 he played with us the year prior. Those are good numbers. Those are very good puck-moving numbers and kind of what we want to see. But, I mean, last season he had that little extra drop maybe because, I mean, he had to outplay Justin Schultz and Jack Johnson. Mm-hmm. So someone had to do it. And it just happened to be him. Sure, things take a dip, but he's still a defenseman. You can't take offensive numbers completely into question when it comes to defensemen. So, yeah, I think he was still a very productive and a still very stable part of this defense for an unstable team.
Yeah, he's clearly a defensive defenseman, and there's no problem with that. We, on this show, and we'll get into him in a little bit later, but Brian Dumoulin, we think, is one of the best defensive defensemen on the Penguins and probably up there as the third or fourth most integral player for the Pittsburgh Penguins year in and year out these past couple seasons. So there's nothing at fault with being a defensive defenseman, but I still think there are some holes in Pettersson's game that need to be rounded out for him to be able to live up to the contract that he signed a couple off seasons ago. He's not very strong on the puck. We did find that this season. That was very much exploited by a lot of teams, especially in a heavier set East Division. Teams like the Capitals, the Bruins, and the Islanders, they kind of had their way with Pettersson a little bit, knocking him off the puck, making him feel a little bit more uncomfortable. And then also in a system that Todd Reirden really wants to expect players to come out and pinch and jump up in the rush, Marcus Pettersson's not the greatest at doing that. His decision-making on when to pinch and when to stay back, there were a couple moments this season, I don't even want to say a couple, there were more than a couple moments this season where his indecision got him in trouble and it kind of screwed his defensive partner, John Marino, whenever that happened. So there's a lot to work on if you're Marcus Pettersson, but I still think the fundamentals are there. I still think he's the same player that came over from Anaheim and played extremely well for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I do still see the Penguins protecting him in the expansion draft. I know we're not doing a mock expansion draft here, but I still see him being the third defenseman protected by the Penguins for the sole purpose of not of having him on the trade block, of being able to possibly trade that, because I think he has a higher trade value than, say, a Mike Mathis and somebody else that could be on the bubble for expansion protection, because Matheson is the better defenseman and he does do better things for the Penguins. But if you're going to lose someone for free, it's going to be the Mike Matheson contract. That's the one you're going to get off the books for free with Seattle. So I would say that they protect Pettersson, if for no other reason than to keep that trade chip. And also, the issue with him is his cap space, and that third pair left D is a spot that P.O. Joseph could take next season. So it's an interesting story for Pettersson this offseason. We'll see if he gets protected. That's the first thing that's going to come up. We'll see if he comes up in trade rumors or gets traded. That's the second thing that comes up. And then when training camp rolls around, is he going to be able to fend off P.O. Joseph? Will Cody Ceci be back on the left side? There's a lot of questions for the second and third pair on the left side that Marcus Pettersson is kind of in the center of all of them.
Right. We went over it not too long ago, and we're probably going to get to it a couple times during this discussion. Our defensive depth right now is not that deep. So he is a necessity as it stands. Yeah, P.O. Joseph can come up and take it, but, just depends on how ready everyone is for him. And then because beyond that, who do we really have on the left side and who do we really have on the right side? It's thin in areas. Let's put it that way.
And I still don't understand. And let me double check that he's a left defenseman, but I still don't understand why we don't have any trust in a guy like Juuso Riikola. I have to check what position he plays, if he's left or right, but he's not played poorly in any of the times that he has been on the ice. So he shoots lefty, so yeah, he's a left defenseman.
Okay. Yeah, it's I don't know what it is with us and not playing Riikola, but it's just a casualty, I guess. We still signed him for whatever reason, so he's going to be around, but for what it's worth, we just don't look at him as a day in and day out player. So If that's the case, I'm not going to either. I'm sorry. It's the way it is. He played two games this year. He played about as much ice time as Yannick Weber, who we won't be talking about here because, well, first of all,
he's already gone.
He wasn't in the top six, and B, he's already in Switzerland, so there's that.
Yeah, so, Riikola still has a year left on his contract, so that is an option if the Penguins decide they want to move on from Pettersson. There haven't been many talks as of yet about Pettersson being on the block this offseason, just what we heard during the regular season about him being a potential trade asset. But we'll keep an eye out on that, and let's talk about his defensive partner, who had a really, really big sophomore slump this year. Especially at the beginning of the season, it looked like his slump was going to be extremely bad. But luckily, again, similar to Pettersson, he stepped his game up towards the end of the season. Only 3 goals and 13 points for John Marino on the season in 53 games, which is only half of the amount of points that he had last season. And he played, in the same amount of games. He played in 53 games last season and had half as many points. 56 games and had twice as many points. He had 26 points last season in 56 games. So it's a regression on the offensive side for a defenseman. And also it looked defensively like he wasn't as sturdy as he was. It was unfortunate too, because he had just come off of signing a long contract, 6 years at $4 million apiece. We were ecstatic that he got locked up before this offseason, because that we thought was going to be a hard contract to sign after another good season by Marino. But right now, he played last season under a $900,000 cap hit. He struggled, but now it's time to, rubber meets the road. His big contract takes effect next season, $4.4 million for 6 years. And like you mentioned, if you keep Pettersson and Marino and they are your third pairing, that's over $8 million for your third pairing.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. This season was we'll let this season be an exception because of the Matheson deal had to kind of slide into the second spot. Mm-hmm. And CeCe didn't make a ton of money, and he overplayed what everyone expected. So, yeah, he was going to be on the second line. Yeah, it just the way the two it's just the way Pettersson and Marino struggled to really start the season. It forced their hands into putting them on that third pairing, and it worked out for what it is worth. I mean, they played phenomenally. I mean, Marino here still averaged over 20 minutes a game, so it's not like they weren't getting playing time. It's just a matter of a number sake there. And, I mean, let's be honest, if Jack Johnson and Justin Schultz didn't just, you know, completely crap out last season, they probably would have been Pettersson and Marino probably would have been the third pairing last year, too, just because of, at that reason, probably age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not having the experience yet. But for now, I feel like going forward, I'm confident in them being a third pairing for sure, especially if it's the exact same six. I liked that defense. I'm not going to say I didn't. It's just every year I'm assuming those two will improve. So that those two starting off the season as a third pairing, I don't hate it. And then going from there, I think, you know, we just got to see what happens with Matheson and Ceci, who also played fair, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, we'll get into Matheson and Ceci, but before that, I do have a question. Last season, as we mentioned, the bulk majority of the season, John Marino had Marcus Pettersson to his left. Would you rather, if they all come back, we'll put in that mm-hmm. caveat, if all of these players are on the team at training camp and at the outset of the season, would you rather Pettersson stay on that side with Marino, or would you rather see what P.O. Joseph looks like on the left side of John Marino? It's weird because they're both puck-moving defensemen. They both like to lug the puck a little bit. But which would you rather see, Pettersson or Joseph on the left side?
I want to see Joseph more, I guess. It's just been a while. Yeah, he had playing time at the beginning of this year, but we just didn't go back to the well at any point. That's a really hard one. I would guess Pettersson just because, I mean, you're paying him the money. Injuries are bound to happen. Joseph will get his playing time. But I think because of the money, I mean, this is the only time I think I've ever seen our defensive cap numbers go up next year.
Yeah.
Because of Marino's $4 million new contract. And that's with Yannick Weber going out and, as of right now, at least CeCe going out. Because those are the only two defensemen we're losing contract-wise. Everyone else is sticking around, so we're going from 26 to 28 million, so we got to figure something out there. If that's the situation, then I mean, I'm not saying you force the trade with Pettersson, but you kind of have to do something with that and play Marino because he's going to be cheaper, and who knows, he might be better. It's just a matter of seeing it play out. I want to see Joseph play a little more before I can really answer that question, but for now, I guess I'm just saying Pettersson because you're paying him. He does have the experience, and those are the two reasons I need right now.
When we mentioned that the Penguins don't have great depth on the blue line, we're not talking about at the NHL level. There's a logjam at the NHL level, and especially when you look at the cap hits, there is a lot of money tied up in the Penguins' top six. If CeCe comes back and gets any type of a pay upgrade, he's going to be the lowest paid defenseman in this core, in this starting six, with probably close to $2 million. So that makes it difficult, especially when you have guys like Pettersson, Marino, who didn't perform to their capabilities. You have a guy like Matheson that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. But also, when we're talking about Pettersson, Marino, if Pettersson isn't with John Marino and you move him up to play with, say, Mike Matheson, and you put Joseph on Marino's side, but if you switch that again, you're putting Joseph with somebody else that's going to be a puck mover. So he's going to have to get out of that role. I just think Marino is a little less of a puck mover, which is why Joseph would acclimate a little bit better, because we saw what Joseph did whenever he played alongside Chris Letang. He started to struggle a little bit because the game went through Letang much more than it went through Joseph, and Joseph's better when the puck's on his stick. But we won't keep harping on P.O. Joseph. We just are both extremely excited to watch this kid come up next season and hopefully have another shot of 15 games, maybe 30 games, who knows, maybe a whole season next year. We'll have to see how it plays out. But let's talk about one of those two defensemen that you said their contract comes up. Yannick Weber's gone. Cody Ceci is a question mark going into this offseason. He's an unrestricted free agent. We talked about him in our 3Ms. Both of us said that you must sign Cody Ceci after the season that he had. He was one of the Penguins' best defensemen. He had kind of an awakening in Pittsburgh. Well, who knows how much he weighs into that whenever he goes into his negotiations, but it was one of his best seasons of his career last year. He was fantastic in his own zone. He was pretty good in the offensive zone as well. And the only reason I see him not coming back is the Penguins not feeling like they can afford him, or Cody Ceci just simply outpricing his way out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I looked up the his agent, because I wanted to see if that would have been a possibility. And mm-hmm. while it doesn't seem like it'll be a real possibility, because he is still Cody Ceci, and you do still kind of have to take his few seasons before here into question. You really do. There's just, he plays on the right side, and there's just no one really right now. I mean, like I said, we have Chad Ruedel, yes. Are you ready for him to be a full-time player? Maybe not. There's Mark Friedman, who Ron Hextall seems to like a lot, but are you ready to stick him into the lineup full-time? Have we seen enough from him? And then that's it, because then you have to go dig into the well of the AHL or your recent signings of Joshua Maniscalco as your next right winger or right side defenseman. So yeah, Cody Ceci is a big decision to make, but I would assume worst comes worst, he's a guy that I'm not gonna be torn up over if we lose him, by the way.
Yeah, if he goes, it would be unfortunate because of how important he was to the team last year and how well he played. But like we mentioned, there's a lot of good names here, and you do have to make room for P.O. Joseph somewhere. I'm not sure how losing a right defenseman makes room for a left defenseman, but we'll have to see. I did accidentally have Matheson and CeCe switched on their side, so that changes a lot of my thought process from the last question. But no, Cody Ceci was a solid compliment to Mike Matheson. You know, Matheson was at his best when he was playing with Ceci. And kind of conversely, the other way around, Ceci was at his best when he was playing with Mike Matheson. It was just a good compliment of a stay-at-home defenseman and a puck-moving, great-skating offensive defenseman. And they worked out really well for the Penguins, much better than anybody could have imagined coming into the season. I mean, at this point, 6 months ago, in January 10th, 3 days before the season was supposed to start, could we have ever imagined we were talking about Cody Ceci and Mike Matheson being the most, I wouldn't say consistent, but being a huge role in why the Penguins' defense was so good this year?
No, they were giving us shades of the Gudbranson and Johnson pairing whenever that was a thing.
Yeah.
But these guys turned out to not be two louts, and at least one of them could really skate. I mean, when we get to him, we'll have that discussion. But for Cody Ceci, I mean, it's all about using him in the correct role. I really think that's it. We saw Toronto attempt to use him on the first pairing
with Morgan Riley.
Who, yes, talented defenseman, but not in the defensive part of the game. Cody Ceci can play a little defense, but just not at a first line level. Not when you're sticking him out there in your starting five of, I don't know who their starting line is exactly, but you know it's Marner, Matthews, whoever, Riley. None of those guys are playing defense. You are leaving it all to Cody Ceci, and he cannot do that. You can't be the only guy playing defense on your team. Whereas you stick Cody Ceci here, second line, should have been third, but who cares? Second line performed just fine. He's playing with the second line. He's not out there with Crosby or Malkin's line as much. He's out there with the defensive line, with the fourth line. Everything is getting shut down in front of him. He doesn't have much to do defensively, so because let's be real, we did see CeCe get burned a couple of times this year.
Yeah, it was not 100%, you know, sunshine and roses with Cody Ceci all year, but the overwhelming majority was.
Yeah, definitely was. And it was early on that it was bad, and then he really kind of found his groove and picked it up toward the end of the year to a near-perfect end of the season. I mean, didn't CeCe have an own goal somewhere early on in the season?
He did.
See,
he did.
Like,
that was in the midst of him playing a game, being sat as a healthy scratch,
back and forth
with Mike Matheson.
And then back in because
back
of
injuries.
Yeah, that was one good thing. I mean, yeah, it didn't. Yeah, last the first three games and that was it. But it was good to see Sullivan take it upon himself to healthy scratch these guys, at least. But I don't know. For what it's worth, it really could go either way with him.
It could. And let's go to his defense partner, because you mentioned a little bit about him earlier, saying, you know, really, really great skater, and that's Mike Matheson. Matheson, of course, this is his first season of what's going to be plenty of seasons on this contract, unless the Penguins somehow, you know, maneuver and get rid of it, whether that be expansion draft this year, whether that be a trade at any point in the next, what, 5 years that he has left contract.
He's got a modified no trade coming up, so we got to figure it out this summer.
Yeah, if you're going to do something, you got to figure it out this summer. But this was the first year, of course, Matheson being the key piece coming back in the Patrick Hornqvist deal and not starting off great. The contract was awful. We were all very, very upset at all of this. But then, you know, he started to do what he does best. He showed that he's a great skater. He showed that he's a fantastic offensive defenseman. And he shored up his game on the back end. And it was helped out a lot by Cody Ceci. I think the two built off of each other. And that's the reason that they had such a good season at the end of it all. And Mike Matheson, listen, it wasn't a bad season. He actually played very well. He was a very good defenseman for the Penguins. But he's always going to be compared to not only that contract, but he's going to be compared to who the Penguins traded for to get him. And the Penguins traded Patrick Hornqvist, who was a fan favorite, who was a multi-time Stanley Cup champion, who was a locker room favorite. And they brought back a guy with an egregious contract that, even if he plays as great as he can play, it's going to be hard for him to mean as much to the city of Pittsburgh as Patrick Hornqvist. So he's fighting an uphill battle, but he did a pretty good job in year one.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, for what it's worth, I think we have both had the discussion that Hornqvist needed to be traded at one point or another.
Yes. It doesn't make it any easier for the guy coming back, though.
No, it doesn't. But I think Matheson, he didn't play up to his contract, but he sure did play well enough that we didn't think about it every time he was on the ice.
True.
I'm not going to talk badly. I'm going to try not to talk badly of Matheson damn near at all in this conversation, because I want to think positively about how he really... I think Jay Fresh is the one who we said he was really gone back and forth, literally in the same shift half the time, on how good or bad he plays. But it's still a net positive, I feel like, because you gotta really drive home the comparisons of who we had on this team last year in these positions, which were Jack Johnson and Justin Schultz, who, you know, yeah, Rutherford refused to talk bad of Jack Johnson in any way, shape, or form. He played better than Jack Johnson, and then Justin Schultz just couldn't do anything for us anymore, and at least Matheson could be out there doing something.
Yeah.
And when Rutherford said it, whenever we got him, that he might be the fastest skater on the team now, holy hell, was he right?
Yeah.
Let's give him that. Let's say that Rutherford is right about something with this acquisition, that we got a faster defensive core with him.
Yep. Now, you said multiple times throughout the season that Mike Matheson is indeed a forward. Do you still hold true to that, or are you willing to accept that he's a defenseman?
I'm willing to accept he's a defenseman for sure, but I mean, the guy just plays like a forward. I think it's a very Chris Letang style of play.
It is, just minus the long flowing hair.
Letang's definitely got some more finesse to his... He looks a little more stylish doing it.
Yes, and Letang is also a much better defensive player than Mike Matheson is, which is why he's a much better player than Mike Matheson is overall. But Mike Matheson, not going to be sleeping all too much the next couple of weeks, maybe even the next couple of months, but congratulations to him and his wife, Emily, who last week did have a little baby boy, Hudson Gray Matheson. So quick congratulations goes out to Mike Matheson and his wife on their newborn baby boy. Hopefully he gets to get back to a normal sleep schedule by the beginning of training camp so he can get ready for year two with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But let's talk a little bit about the top pairing, because we always say that this top pairing is one of the most underrated in hockey, and we say that they are constantly one of the best in hockey. Let's talk about how they did this season, though, because it was a little bit different. Let's start with Brian Dumoulin. He had a really interesting season, injured again early on, but then coming back and towards the end of it, found kind of an offensive touch to his game for the first time in his career. He always seemed to score in big games, but he had a 6-game point streak in April, his career best 6-game point streak. And it was weird because we went through it for a little while and he kept scoring points, and it was very weird. But other than that, he played back to what we expected Brian Dumoulin to play as if. Last year, he didn't play all that great. A lot of injuries last season as well. But finally this year, it started to look like, you know, the best defensive defenseman the Pittsburgh Penguins have ever had. He started to look back to that level of play, and we really needed it, especially Chris Letang early on.
Yeah, I was trying to look at, because he doesn't score often, and he damn near hit a career high in goals, and it seems like every time he scores, the Penguins win. I'm trying to, like, find the numbers on that, but, I mean, just, his play was, yeah, it started off not that great. We thought maybe he's still injured from his injury in St. Louis damn near 2 years ago now, because that's kind of what it seemed. He was still coming in slow, coming in hobbling, not, you know, looking his best, but then he gets hurt again. Okay, you're still losing your top defenseman. That's not good. Comes back and is just this new guy, basically. This new, not an offensive defenseman, but a new sort of touch to him that we've never really seen before. And it was very impressive. And, I mean, we don't expect it to stay. But
no.
Anytime you can get out there and score some pretty big goals, hell yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's not even like they were just assists. I mean, 4 goals and 10 assists isn't bad, especially for him. I mean, it's no career high, for sure. But put it this way, he played in 41 games even. That's half of a full season. Double that up. Yeah, he would be tied for a career high in assists, and he would have, I mean, he's one away from a career high in goals. So, yeah, full season, that pace, that is a career high for scoring for him.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can dispute the fact that this team, and especially Chris Letang, is much better when he's on the ice than they are when he's off it. I mean, there was a stat that was going around. It wasn't even a stat. It was the Penguins' record without Brian Dumoulin was just about 500 with a couple OT losses in there. But with Brian Dumoulin, they were way far and away above 500. I think they were close to 750 when it came to points percentage when Brian Dumoulin was in the lineup. So clearly the Penguins still need him. He's still only, I believe, 29 years of age or early 30s.
29.
He's either 29 or 30. Yeah, 29.
29.
So he's still pretty young. He still has his legs under him. So I would expect he comes back after an off season where he gets to be healthy throughout the whole offseason. That's going to be huge for Brian Dumoulin coming into next year, his first full season in hopefully 4 years, I believe it is. So let's talk about somebody else, you know, finish it off with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll say the Pittsburgh Penguins legend because that's what he is on this team. And that's Chris Letang, one of the best seasons of his career in the 2020-21 season. He stayed healthy basically the entire year, only missed one game, scores 7 goals, finished with 45 points in 55 games, and a plus 19 rating. And again, we say this every time we bring up the plus minus statistic. We don't believe in it very much unless it's very high or very low. But when you look at the plus 19, which is Chris Letang's highest mark since the 2011-2012 season, where he got a plus 21, also his plus 19 was his second best of his career, that's pretty telling of how Chris Letang played, especially at the end of the season, because his first month, similar to Evgeny Malkin, who we talked about on episode 53, was absolutely abysmal. It was some of the worst hockey we had ever seen him play. So for him to come back and get his statistics up to world-class numbers and career-best numbers for Chris Letang, just kudos to him, and hopefully this is the Letang that we get to see next season, because a lot of people are saying, of the core, his fall-off is going to be the quickest and the most drastic. And we luckily didn't see that this season.
Yeah, he shocked everyone, I'd say. I mean, yeah, these aren't exactly career highs, but it's hard to get career highs in a shortened season. But being third on this team in scoring is impressive. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, just 38 assists. Yeah, he didn't put the puck in the net himself much, but you don't exactly expect that from your defenseman, do you? I get he's Chris Letang, but I'm not expecting him to score every game.
No, and if you look at it, he played in 55 games, so you have to think that there's about 30 games that you had to have to add in a regular season. He would get to like 10 or 12 goals, which in a season is a little bit low. Usually he gets between 15 and 18 goals, but It's a pretty decent pace for him, especially considering a couple games. He had two-goal games. I think he had two-goal games in this season, one of them against the Islanders.
They were both against the Islanders.
And the other one, yeah, it was both against the Islanders, actually. So Chris Letang had a really good season, and my only question about him is, when is the downfall? Because we're all expecting this massive downfall. We thought, you know, this was might have been the season that John Marino took over his spot. That didn't happen because John Marino didn't take any steps forward. We thought maybe P.O. Joseph is going to take it. What are we thinking? Is Chris Letang still the number one defenseman at the end of next season? Not at the beginning, because he clearly, going into it, is going to be the number one. But at the end of next season, will either Marino or Joseph be able to overpower him as the most integral defenseman on this team?
I think Letang still has it. He proved me wrong last season. I mean, I think just last season we all kind of went into it with some dark thoughts, or this past season. We went into it with some dark thoughts. We didn't exactly know what this core was capable of anymore. We just weren't sure. We weren't. I mean, now we're still a little unsure, but at least we have a little more certainty in certain things, and one of them is that Letang should be fine to still be a number one at the end of this upcoming season, despite it him being, oh, I don't have his age, old. Despite him being older, Crosby's age, he'll be 34. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he could still hold on. I mean, he plays every minute of every night. Okay, yeah, he averaged 24 this past season. I expect that to continue, just at least another season. Mm-hmm. I got no more to say on it. I think he can really do it. One more year as the top guy. Maybe the scoring falters a little, but who knows? I mean, being on the top line, you're probably playing with, playing along with Crosby and or Malkin quite often, so I like his chances.
It's intriguing that for a team that had six defensemen play in the same roles, in the same position spots, for the final 2 months of the season and into the playoffs, there's actually a pretty large amount of uncertainty as to what the top six is going to look like at the beginning of the season. So it could be set in stone the same way it is now. The Penguins could lose Cody Ceci. The Penguins could trade away one of Matheson or Pedersen. The Penguins could just flat out say Pedersen is benched because we think P.O. Joseph is better. We don't know what's going to happen, but the only thing that is usual certainty for the Pittsburgh Penguins on the blue line is Brian Dumoulin and Chris Letang are going to be leading the forces in the top pairing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up Dumoulin. I did go through all of his goals only twice ever, and that includes playoff games because he only has one playoff goal. Two, but we won them in both. Only twice has Dumoulin scored in a game and they've outright lost. There's a couple of overtime losses in there, but he has 15 career goals, and only twice have the Penguins lost in those games. So good things happen when he scores.
Yeah, he's kind of like the kiss of death for the opponents. If you allow a goal from Brian Dumoulin, you will not win this game.
It's a lot of fun. He seemed to have chipped in on a lot of important games from what I saw in that, too.
Mm-hmm. He scored in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals in 2016. So, yeah, pretty important goals.
Yeah, and then his second career playoff goal came in one of those Flyers games in 18. He had a goal and an assist in that game. I didn't see which one it was exactly, though.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to close out this episode with our weekly Pens poll. We'll be right back.
Hockey fights, lifestyle, and tales from a first-round draft bust? We have it all and more on the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for boutique hockey content and podcasts covering every team in the NHL.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by the Hockey Podcast Network. We talked to you guys in our first segment about our roster in review, Pittsburgh Penguins defense. Make sure you tune in this Thursday to episode 56 of season 2, where we talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins goaltending. We'll talk about Tristan Jarry and how he has his season, how his postseason affected him or should affect him. We'll talk about Casey DeSmith when he returns from injury. We'll talk about Max Lagasse, and we'll also talk about some of the names that are surrounding the Pittsburgh Penguins heading into the offseason. Hint, hint, a little Tuukka Rask talk. But for right now, let's talk about our weekly Pens poll. Our poll this week was, Just simply, who had the better flow this season? Brandon Tanev or Jared McCann? Brandon Tanev won the poll with 62% of the vote. Jared McCann getting a reasonable 38% of the vote. Horwat, who do you think had the better flow?
See, it's hard. Both these competitors came in just with the unexpectedness of it. Mm. They both had the shorter hair. Hell, McCann had a very high do. I don't even know how to put it. I forget what exactly it's called.
High do.
Yeah, a hairdo. He had a very high hairdo. It was very up high. If you look at his old mugshot, I'm all over. If you look at his old...
I was unaware that Jared McCann was arrested.
Yeah, you know. But no, if you look at his old photo, it's very high. You can just see it. It's got some height to it. It's got some depth. Then he comes in with that, and that wasn't expected. Then you see Tandem did the same thing, although he had way less hair. Didn't see that one coming either. So they both kind of... Both competitors really had a little bit of a spice to them. You just weren't expecting it.
A little certain je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, I mean, we all knew Letang was growing it back. Then it was honest to God, it was kind of hard trying to pick all three of them apart at times. Gonna be real.
Letang and Tanev's were more similar than McCann.
McCann's got a little more brunette in him.
Yeah, and it was curlier.
I guess so, yeah. When dry, yeah. Not on the ice, covered in water and sweat.
Yeah.
Overall, for who had to be the best one, though? I think, you see, because they both also have memeable pictures of themselves. I mean, you have the headshot from Tanev that we all have seen 1,000 times over. But McCann with that hat, man. That low, all-the-way-around hat.
Mm-hmm.
Just... Yeah, it's hard to really make a pick. I forget who I did pick. Wish I would have pulled that up. Would have been better for this.
Originally, I had included... Originally, this wasn't about hair. Originally, this poll was made to say who has the better style, and Jason Zucker was also involved. Mm. But you know what? I decided I wanted to go with who had the best flow, and I excluded Chris Letang simply because he usually gets all the votes, especially, you know, going with the man bun for the headshot for Chris Letang this year. But... I personally picked Jared McCann because I think, you know, the curly hair and the curly flow coming out of the bucket, I thought that looked a little bit better than the Brandon Tanev. But either way, it's nice to see these two, you know, that produce on the ice. It's even cooler to see, you know, cool goals. If you look back at the pictures of Brandon Tanev's playoff goal, it's accentuated by the fact that he has the flow rocking out of the back of his hair. Hopefully, we see McCann do that a little bit more next season. But a fun little poll here in the offseason. Sometimes they'll go a little off the rails with the Pens poll because we don't need to be serious all the time. We'll talk about hair. We'll talk about style. We'll talk about music as we did on last Thursday's episode.
Yeah, it's also the offseason. I mean, what else do we have to talk about?
Until something happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that I did vote for Tanev, and I guess that must have been because of the meme factor in there. I mean, let's be honest, that kind of took over a lot of Penguins Twitter for a while. So there's my official answer.
So you took Tanev, I took McCann. Most of our listeners sided with you, but that's all right. I don't have to be right all the time, just most of the time.
It's fair.
But that's going to do it for this episode of The Tip of the Iceberg. Horwat, any last words for the folks before we send them home for the first time this week?
Yes, thank you for continuing to listen, even though I can't remember words all of the time.
Yeah, I'll have to go look. Maybe Jared McCann was arrested at some point, and you just happened to see his mugshot, as you claim to have. But I highly doubt it, because Jared McCann is a nice young fellow, so I'm sure he hasn't been arrested yet. But thank you guys for tuning in. What?
Yet. All right.
Well, I mean, you never know.
All right.
I haven't been arrested yet either. Neither have you.
All right, let's end. You don't know that. No, I haven't. But let's end this. This is getting wild.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of The Tip of the Iceberg. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. Thank you to everybody for following on social media and for subscribing on Apple Podcasts. That'll do it. We'll see you guys on Thursday. You can follow us on Twitter at NickHorwat41 and at Nick_Berlansky. You can also follow the show's Twitter handle at Iceberg Podcast. This podcast can be found anywhere you get your podcasts from, so please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. We are brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. You can visit them on Twitter at HockeyPodNet or at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. MLBnetwork.com. Every team, everywhere.